Hi, this is Gurusi Singh and you're listening to my Thick Accent Podcast. So let's get straight into introducing our guest today, because there's a lot to unpack and learn from her. She is an accomplished career expert who has dedicated her career to helping professionals stand out in the competitive job market and find fulfilling career opportunities. With over 15 years of experience, she has guided executives, managers, and mid-career professionals on their career journeys, providing valuable insights and support. As an ICF's Associate Certified Coach, Certified Career Development Practitioner, and Certified Career Management and Executive Leadership Development Coach, she has empowered countless individuals to gain clarity, articulate their success stories, and secure their dream jobs faster. She's also an author of books like 21 Resilient Women, Tell Stories, Get Hired, and the bestsellers No Canadian Experience. That expression is part of the title, by the way. And she's also the recipient of several awards, including Outstanding Canadian Career Leader and the 2018 Outstanding Interview Strategist Award, the Alumni of Distinction Award from Conestoga College, also nominated for Zonta Women of Achievement Award and RBC Canadian Women Empowerment Entrepreneur Awards. She's also featured in the Globe and Mail, Toronto Sun, and Career Journals, and the former career advisor for CBC's Radio Canada International. And the list goes on. So without any further ado, please welcome Daisy Wright.
Thank you so much for inviting me to this important event of my Thick Accent Podcast. I'm pleased to be here, Gurusi.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you, Daisy. I was really excited when I met you for the first time during the networking event. And I was like, okay, I have to speak to this person. I have to bring this person on the podcast. So welcome. Thank you so much for doing this.
And thank you for inviting me.
Awesome. So let's just talk about you now today. And I always ask my guests to take us back to the time to their home countries where they were born, a little bit about their formative years and what the focus was on growing up. And also tell me, when was the first time you heard about Canada?
Okay, so I'm originally from Jamaica. And the first time I heard about Canada, actually, I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And I had to write an essay, and somehow I chose Kitchener. There was something that I did some research in the actual Britannica, the book.
Okay.
And Kitchener, the name Kitchener came up, and I didn't have a clue where Kitchener was. And now I'm here living just an hour away from Kitchener. Oh, wow. So I think that was the first time I really heard about Canada. But my journey has been one of those twists and turns, in a sense. I went to college in Jamaica. In fact, I actually wanted to be a radio announcer. That's what my career, that's what I had wanted to become. And I remember going for the audition, passing the first part of the audition, and was so excited. So I went back home in the country and I was telling my parents that, oh, I'm going to move to the big city, Kingston, to become a radio announcer. And my parents said, no, you had better go to college. Radio announcing is too glamorous for a girl from the country. Mm-hmm. And of course, as a young person, fresh out of high school, you're going to listen to your parents. So I ended up going to college instead. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't lost my love for radio or TV for that matter. Anyway, so fast forward to some years where I had gone with my friend down to the Canadian consulate. And while we were there, she said to me, Canada is looking for people like you and your husband. Mm-hmm. And I went up to the counter and I asked the lady at the counter if it was true. And then she gave me this one-page questionnaire. Mm-hmm. And I filled it in. And I remember going home and saying to my husband, I think we're moving to Canada. And he said, what? I said, well, I just filled in this form. Mm-hmm. So 3 months passed and I received a proper application. And we looked at it and we threw it down and, you know, I said, you know what, I was just joking. But months later, I saw the application again and I said to him, let's fill this in and see where it leads. Mm-hmm. And we filled it in, and in 8 months, we had had our visas to move to Canada.
Oh, wow.
Then we had had a daughter. Yeah. And then my husband had family in New York. So we decided rather than coming straight to Canada, we would stop for a few months in New York City. While there, I got bored and I said, you know, I'm going to look for a job. And I found a job with the United Nations. Mm-hmm. Then it was UNIFEM. It's now UN Women. Mm-hmm. And that kind of started my journey in the States. A year and a half later, well, I got pregnant while I was there with my son. Mm-hmm. And a year and a half later, we moved to Canada. So that's where the Canadian journey actually, you know, took root, literally. So that's how we got here.
Okay. So I want to talk more about your Canadian journey, obviously, that the whole travel to Canada as well. But tell me, first of all, is this something that people don't know about Jamaica that you'd like to share?
Well, you know, I don't know what people don't know about Jamaica. We are such a very popular country. Mm-hmm. And we have one of the most recognizable flags, I can say that. So I don't know what people don't know about it. You know, tourism is the main industry there. Of course, we excel. We do very well at the Olympics in athletics and all of that. Mm-hmm. And if I should say something that people might not know about Jamaica, it's that we're a multicultural country. Mm-hmm. 90% of us are of African descent, mm-hmm. but we do have cultures from, you know, people from different cultures, whether it's India, whether it's Israel, whether it's name it, whether mm-hmm. it's Venezuela, wherever we do have, whether it's Chinese, like I said,
okay.
We are what you would call, and we actually live our motto of out of many, one people. So a lot of people might think that, oh, you know, Jamaica is just this one block of, you know, people who are primarily of African descent. Yeah. But no. And because of, you know, intermarriages and all of that, then, you know, we have, you know, blood running from all different cultures. So that's probably one of the things that people might not know.
Okay. You know, I asked that, like, definitely I didn't know about that enough. And thank you for sharing that. And I asked that question because even though people do know about India and know there are multicultural, a lot of languages are there. But one thing which was really surprising for people to know here when I was talking to them, that English is not spoken by everybody in India. And the national language, which is Hindi, is also not spoken by everybody in India. So English is spoken by just 10% of the Indian population, and which is like around 125 million. And whereas the Hindi is majorly spoken all around India, but majorly spoken in the northern part more than the southern. So that's something that people didn't know about. That's why I thought of asking this question.
That's interesting to know because I didn't know that. I know many people that I know, they actually studied English in India, but I wasn't aware it was just 10%. Having said that, our language in Jamaica is English, but we do have a dialect, which is Patois.
Okay.
And it's a mixture of English and, you know, African languaging and all of that. Mm-hmm. But our main language is English.
Okay. And that's like the official language.
It is the official language. They're trying to get Patois to be recognized, not necessarily an official language per se, but but they want to recognize it as a language.
So, you know, I remember you just did mention that you worked with UN in the US in New York, UN Women. And I remember you also telling me that it's one of the best jobs you have had. Tell me, why is that?
Okay. Now you're touching on my sweet spot. Because I was, so when I got the job, I was meeting people from different countries. Some of the countries I had only read about, like mm-hmm. Egypt and Ethiopia, mm-hmm. you know, Sri Lanka. Mm-hmm. And so it gave me this rich experience that I was just so excited to meet individuals from these countries, to talk mm-hmm. with them, to learn so much about them. And I think that was the main piece that really, really hooked me. The second piece was to realize that the work we were doing within UNIFEM, and like I said, it's now UN Women,
yeah.
was benefiting so many women across the developing world. Mm-hmm. And one thing that stuck with me was one of the consultants had visited one country, I forget which one it was. And she came back and she was telling us that they're going to be working on a project providing funding to build a well in this particular company, a well mm-hmm. where people can get water because yeah. they have to walk miles for water. Mm-hmm. And that thing struck me because I said to myself, where we are this side of the world, we turn the tap on and we get water. If we mm-hmm. don't get water, we are going to be phoning I would be phoning Peel Region and say, what happened to my water?
Yeah.
And I recognize the privilege that we had, or I had, to know that I can get water anytime. And there were people in these other, you know, countries that didn't have that access. Mm-hmm. So that was its second piece. And then the third piece is it really gave me a good sense of, you know, where my interest lies, where my passion lies in terms of, you know, encouraging women and developing women and having conversations with women, primarily to say to them, listen, you are as good as you think you are. Hmm. You know, reminding them that, you know, you should quit playing small, don't buy into the concept that, you know, people think because you're who you are, then you shouldn't be anywhere else. And I mean, I use my own example. I'm kind of, you know, going off track just a little bit.
Sure.
But I use my own example when I was working in corporate here in Canada. And, you know, somehow I just was not able to go through that concrete ceiling mm-hmm. of, you know, getting a promotion, knowing I am well qualified, knowing my work spoke for itself, my performance appraisal spoke for itself. And somehow I wasn't just getting through. But instead of becoming sorry for myself, which I did a little bit, but I said to myself, you know, there is so much more to you than that. Do not buy into what people think you should be or where you should go. And that kind of started my trajectory into, you know, going into my own business. But then that's for another time. But I just wanted to say it's my passion around mentoring and coaching and encouraging women. That's what I took from my experience at the UN.
Okay, I really like the two things that you mentioned. The first thing is that we forget to count our blessings. And this definitely, I think, gave you an idea to appreciate the resources that are so readily available to you. And we just don't appreciate that. And the second thing which I really liked you said is, you know, don't buy the other's idea of your growth or your life. So I really like these mm-hmm. two. Yeah. So then, Daisy, in 1989, I believe you finally moved to Canada, right? So tell us about your first day. What was going on in your mind?
Well, first of all, we landed in 88.
Okay.
And then we went back to New York City where I had to finish my contract. So we moved up here in 89. Mm-hmm. My husband had come first because he had to find a place for us to live. Mm-hmm. So he came. And I remember when he was leaving, he said, if I didn't find a job in my field in 2 weeks, I was going to take anything that I got.
Mm.
And I said, of course you're going to find a job in your field. Remember they told us there are so many jobs there for you and I that we were even joking that you were going to have one foot in one job and another foot in the other job. So he came. 2 weeks later, he phoned and he said, well, I didn't get a job in my field, but I got a job in a factory. Mm-hmm. And I said, what? Because I was shocked. I mean, he's a system operator actually with the hydro company. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was a shock to the system. However, I like to use this story because I want people who are listening, and particularly those who are planning to move to Canada or they've recently arrived. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to do what you have to do when you get here. The important thing is to focus on where you want to go. So we did move into a basement apartment, a brand new basement apartment. But after 4 months, we moved to a townhouse. Mm-hmm. Shortly after, I got a job working with one of the major banks. The good thing is that nobody asked me about lack of Canadian experience, because I guess if they had asked me, then I would probably have told them where to go. Anyway, I was not faced with that, but I was speaking about my husband, who was literally faced with that lack of Canadian experience. Mm-hmm. But a year later, he actually got into the hydro company, doing exactly what he was doing back in Jamaica. Why do I say that? If you keep focused on where you want to go, you will get there. It's not where you are today. It's where you're going. And I use that to encourage anyone that don't get so weighed down by what used to happen back home. And back home, I was such and such. You choose Canada like we did. We chose Canada to be our home. And while it was disappointing in terms of the job prospects because of what we were told, we still decided that we were going to make the best of it. And we did. And so I started my job, like I said, with one of the major banks. And after 5 years, I realized, you know, I wasn't getting anywhere. You know, people were being hired and, you know, being promoted, and I was still there. And so again, it was new to me, because back in Jamaica, as long as you're qualified, you are going to be it's a competition, yes, but the best person is going to get that role. There was nothing that told us in our culture that we couldn't be whoever we wanted to be. Again, because we were seeing people, Jamaicans of different cultures, rising to, you know, different levels in different organizations. I will also say, though, that we do have this, because of colonialism, we do have this colorism issue in terms of the lighter you are, the more favored, you know, you're going to be. That's there, but it still does not prevent somebody who is brilliant, somebody who can do the job. It does not prevent them from actually, you know, rising. So again, coming from that, using that as a backdrop, when I got here in Canada, it was totally new to me. And so I decided, well, am I going to be sorry for myself forever and just stay where people thought I should stay? Or am I going to look at the wider horizon and see where I could fit, where I could take my skills and my experience? And that's what I did. And in fact, I decided I was going to start resume writing because I had background in writing. I was in public relations when I was in Jamaica. And at the same time, I said I was going to explore an opportunity to teach. And I remember one of my colleagues said to me, who told you you can teach? And I said to her, watch me. And I actually applied to several colleges in the Greater Toronto area. Sheridan College was the only one that responded by someone calling me and saying, you know, we would do well, we would do well with someone like you, but we don't have an opportunity right at the moment. And I was ecstatic because I said, at least somebody responded to me. And 6 months later, I followed up and the woman said to me, this other person said, come in for an interview. Went for the interview. And 2 weeks later, I was teaching in the Faculty of Business at Sheridan College. Now, again, I say this to let people know that do not allow anyone to put any limits on you. You have to try. You have to explore. You have to see what's out there. You have to try. If it doesn't work, I mean, I have explored a lot of stuff that just did not work. But I can't now say, well, I should have. I tried it. It didn't work. I moved on. So I got an opportunity to teach at Sheridan College. And with that, I actually asked my then employer if I could go part-time. Because I'd gotten this experience. And then, of course, I wasn't getting anywhere in the bank anyway. And they kindly obliged. They said, yes, I could. And I started teaching part-time. And then I started my resume writing business part-time. And 6 months later, the bank told me that it's time I come back. And I told them it's time I didn't come back. And so I kind of went off on my own. But at some point in teaching, the colleges generally, they started to cut part-time teachers' pay. And it was a situation where, am I going to take, you know, such a drastic cut in salary, or am I going to do something else to help me while I was building the business? So I decided to go back into corporate, to work with companies on contract, while I still continued with my business. So the long and short of it, Garesis, is that it was a risk that I took. And I would tell people, anybody who is thinking of that, to say, think of it carefully. Make sure you have the support. I had the support of my husband and family. So that has helped me up to today. And it's not that you're going to start your business and overnight it's going to be a success. Yeah. No, it's not going to happen like that. So you have to work at it. But again, you have to be confident within yourself of what you're capable of doing and how you're going to move forward. And you'll hear me say from time to time, don't allow anyone to place limits on you. Whether they're going to say, well, you know, you have an accent, and well, we all have accents. And that's what people don't realize, right? The important thing is, are you understanding me?
Yeah.
When I speak, are you understanding me?
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. You know, don't let anyone limit you. And speaking of accents, it's like my favorite topic all the time. It's not about how you are saying it. It's about what are you saying it. And I think initially it takes a little bit of time to get accustomed to each other's accents. You know, I remember me introducing myself in the class, nobody understanding me. I spoke for like 5 minutes. And to the point we became like best of friends, you know, at the end of the semester. So it takes a little bit of time to get accustomed to each other's accents.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you mentioned the part about becoming friends, because that's so important. And I will tell you, I've said before that none of us should what I term ghettoize ourselves, meaning just put ourselves within the culture that we know and grew up with. We have to expand our base. We have to make sure that we have people of different cultures and backgrounds in our lives. That's how we become rich Mm-hmm. In terms of learning about other cultures and developing relationships. When my children were small, we enrolled them in the local sports that the city, you know, promotes different sports. Yeah. And we enroll our kids in dancing, in skating, in swimming, later on in baseball, basketball, soccer for my daughter, and all of that. And what came out of that was the children were able to develop relationships with other kids from other cultures.
Yeah.
They were only thinking friendship, mm-hmm. nothing else. Mm-hmm. The color of their skin, what they look like, how they speak was not an issue for them then.
Yeah.
And so I remember there were times my son was very good in baseball. Like he was tops. Mm-hmm. We even thought he was going to play for the New York Yankees because he was born in New York.
Yeah.
But anyway, and there were kids who would tell their parents they want to be on the team that Gion is on. So the parents would end up calling us to say, which team is Gion going to be on? Because my son wants to play on his team. And I say this because, again, they had developed such great relationships. They were friends and they were looking at somebody who, you know, who do I want on my team or whose team do I want to be on? And it's important for us to learn from kids. And I can tell you now they're adults, but they still have friends from those relationships. Mm-hmm. As parents, we are still connected to some of the parents who were in that group. That's why it's important for us to literally go out of our way to interact with people from different cultures, because that can teach us a whole lot. And more importantly, it teaches us that we are more alike than different.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the best thing about Canada also. Like, it's like the melting point. All the cultures come together and you kind of assimilate into the predominant society that you are living in. And it's not divided as per your backgrounds or ethno-culture groups that you come from. And that's the best thing about Canada I love about. And, you know, I want to talk more about these aspects a little bit in terms of challenges that you faced and compare it to the times of today. And I want to give listeners like a better idea of it. Let's just categorize it in a few aspects. So let's just start with the language, our very favorite. You know, back then, limited access to language and resources. And now, yes, the barriers still persist, but there are a lot of platforms and learning ways that you can learn it. Tell us about your experience of that.
In terms of language, neither my husband nor I had such an issue.
Okay.
Because like I said, our language is English.
Mm-hmm.
So even though some people might be surprised, I remember one woman was telling me, she said, "Oh, you speak so well." And I said, "Well, English is my language." English is my language.
Yeah.
You know, so we never had that issue.
Hmm.
And in terms of English classes for people whose language wasn't English, it wasn't as dominant as it is now.
Hmm.
And that's a good thing. Now they have so many different, you know, ways that people can, you know, improve their language skills.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that was kind of missing during our time was they did not have as many nonprofit organizations
mm-hmm.
offering, say, job search skills, for example, or even offering services to help us, you know, get our feet on the ground, kind of. They didn't have them in those times. Mostly it was the government that offered those programs.
Yeah.
And there weren't a lot of programs in an event. And that's the difference then and now. Now we have a plethora of services that can help newcomers to really advance. One of the things that was a plus then is that it didn't take us long. It took us 8 months to get our visas from start to finish. Now I hear it's taking much longer.
But that's a dream for people nowadays. 8 months is a dream.
Yeah, 8 months then.
It does not happen, yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying. So, you know, there are pluses on that side. But in terms of the services that were available during our time, they didn't have as many services. So a lot of things we had to do in terms of trial and error, you know, finding things out on our own and so on.
So what about networking and technology, obviously? Tell us about that.
Networking was mostly, well, not mostly, was definitely in person. You know, we would go to events to meet with people at work. Obviously, you're networking with your colleagues at work. One of the places that that was good for networking was traveling on the go train from, you know, I'm in Brampton and traveling to Toronto for my job. You meet people. You develop relationships with these people. You end up becoming friends with some of the people that you work with. You end up in fact, some of my clients when I started my resume writing business, some of my clients were people I met on the train. So the networking there was more organic. There wasn't anything that was
transactional.
Yeah. These days, you do have LinkedIn, for example.
Yeah.
LinkedIn was born in 2003, so it's 20 years old. So now we have that as a platform to network. We have other platforms, whether it's Instagram, whether it's TikTok these days, whether it's Twitter. You know, we have those online ways of networking. And of course, with Zoom, And that's one of the, you know, the pandemic had, you know, its old issues. But one of the main benefits of the pandemic was that we realized that Zoom, or put it this way, virtual connection was possible.
Absolutely.
And so a lot of things happen. People are hosting networking events via, you know, virtual platforms and all of that. So technology has really benefited us to a large degree. Now, you know, we are in right at this point, we are in the artificial intelligence space. And that's gonna take us you know, rightly or wrongly, we don't know a whole lot about it. But it's gonna take us places. And we just have to embrace it. It's going to come. It will come with its biases and limitations, but it's something that we have to embrace. So yes, technology has really evolved from a networking perspective to, you know, learning and all of that.
Yeah, you said it right that this conversation today is happening, which I feel like this podcast is the product of the changes that we see during pandemic, being able to have this virtual conversations, and it is a product of that.
Absolutely.
And I also want to talk a little bit about the social and, you know, cultural integration, and give us like a comparison of how it was back then and now.
I think for me, and I can only use my own experience actually, in terms of, I was very intentional in building relationships with people from different cultures, from different backgrounds. And, you know, it could have I would think it would have started from Jamaica, as I said before. You know, we are out of many one people. So, you know, you could see white Jamaican, you could see Indian Jamaican, you could see, you know, so it could have started from there. And then, as I said, I moved to the UN, and then the world was there pretty much. And then I moved to Canada, primarily, predominantly white, but I was not afraid to reach out to people, to talk with, you know, anybody who would listen. Now, it's not easy for everyone, and I'm not going to say that. But you have to. I subscribe to the fact that we are all We may look different on the outside, but we're all human beings.
100%, yeah.
And we were made to interact with each other. So just as well we get used to it, you know, get used
yeah.
to it.
Yeah.
So from a social perspective, I think you have to be deliberate. Mm-hmm. And that's why I said earlier that you don't have to, yes, you feel comfortable within your own grouping, within your own cultural grouping. And that's okay. Sometimes that's where you need to rest.
And that's a start.
Exactly. Okay. But, you know, take a chance and try to learn something new or something different from somebody else.
Yeah.
So from that social piece, that's how you can literally build relationships.
Yes, absolutely, 100%.
I don't know if that answers the question.
No, it definitely does. Like I was saying, you know, building that social networks and establishing that sense of belonging can be a challenge, you know, especially for immigrants with no social support. So just by, you know, giving that a try, you know, just taking that first step to instill that curiosity in you to know about the other person or their culture even, you know, that definitely like will widen your horizon and can actually benefit your survival in this new world, you know, where life has never existed before. That's for sure.
Exactly.
Another thing, Daisy, I was speaking to somebody and we end up talking about, you know, how, and she moved to Canada like in 1990s and we were talking about job search and she was telling me that back then, obviously we had to go in person, like to restaurants or cafes if we are looking at such kind of jobs. And there were situations where people were giving her looks, like she was Indian. People were giving her looks and people were questioning her outlook because she was wearing the traditional Indian attire and she was, wearing that bindi.
Yes.
And it was questioned at times. And so I want to ask you that, how was your experience in terms of those kind of interactions? And do you think that times have changed? I believe, yes, they have changed, but there's still a long way to go. I would like to know your opinion on that.
Yes. So, first of all, again, I didn't face that, probably again because, you know, of, you know, where I grew up. And I mean, you know, we have the, you know, it's kind of, you know, this side of the world, Western.
Yeah.
So I didn't face that. But you're right. In those days, I hardly saw people who were, most people, even if they were of a different cultures, they were dressed in what we would call the norm then.
Yeah.
The good thing about, and like you rightly said, things have changed, but we are not there yet.
Yeah.
And it's, so now we're seeing much more individuals, you know, being their authentic selves, meaning they're wearing their national dress and what have you, and it's becoming more acceptable. No, we are not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not everybody is going to be accepted, you know, going to accept it, but it's more acceptable now than it was then. And while people felt a need to probably what we would call code switch, in a sense, not code switching in terms of languaging, but code switching in terms of dress.
Yeah.
Now it's definitely different. The other thing I would say, though, is we also have to be cognizant of what Canada is and understand why sometimes there is going to be resentment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because people feel that, well, you know, we have to be accommodating all these different, you know, things and cultures and prayer rooms and all of that, you know, and the responsibility is on each of us, every one of us, to have conversations around how are you feeling? Why are you feeling this way? Is that going to make a difference with us developing relationships? Right? We have to recognize, and it's a lot of times it's because of fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
You see, so we have to be very careful. And even people who might feel that, oh, you know, they want to force us to adopt their culture, their lifestyle. Again, we have to pause. We have to understand that, yes, everything takes time. And we are not here to change things. We are here to say, yes, we recognize who you are, what you are, what you represent. But together, we can learn, we can cultivate relationship, we can literally tolerate each other in a way that we won't end up being resenting anyone on either side.
Yeah. I think that the bigger goal should be to integrate into the new culture without forgetting from where you come from. And I think when somebody brings that wealth of that understanding of certain culture, I think that actually to some point facilitates their career, right? It helps the businesses to have that external perspective, which they might have never thought about. So it's nice and it's important to keep that with you, but not forget it, but at the same time, evolve as the life goes on, as you are in a new environment. Exactly. And it's important to change and unlearn and relearn few things. And that's absolutely fine.
Absolutely. It's a matter of, and it's integrating in a sense, but not integrating where you're going to forget.
Absolutely.
Your own culture. And you said something very important earlier. It's a matter of learning from each other, because we can teach people so much about who we are, what our backgrounds are like, and it makes us richer. For that. Now, I've heard, Canadians in quotes say, well, they're just coming here and they're ready to change our culture and all of that. You know what? That's not true. Because if you go back, way back, who were the first Canadians? If, and what... I mean, that's a political hot potato, but when the Europeans came, they ended up changing the culture of, the indigenous people who were here, we shouldn't go get into a debate where we start deciding, well, this is the culture and that's where you fit in. Yes, we can integrate, learn to live with people. To me, the most important piece is learning. What can I learn from Gorosis today? Yeah. Because it's going to make me richer. It's going to make me a better person. It's going to make me more acceptable. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to garner more acceptance, from both sides.
Yeah. 100%. I think sometimes we forget this opportunity that we have got to live in this country where people from all around the world have come. There is so much to learn from all this, and we should really, really make use of this opportunity and not let it go.
Absolutely. And I'm telling you, and I will say to people, if I were, even though we had, as a family, the opportunity to remain in the States because of my job, I could have stayed. I was the one who resigned. Mm. All they would do would just keep renewing the contract. But our aim was to move to Canada. Having moved to Canada, I would have done the same thing. We would have moved right here because Canada is one of the best places to live and to grow your family. And I wouldn't, 30 odd years later, I still wouldn't change that. With all its challenges, I still wouldn't change it.
So Dizzy, I also want to touch upon this one aspect we discussed very briefly in our earlier conversation, and that kind of stayed with me. And this was this mentality that people who are here from some time have when they speak to newcomers. And this line, I just want to quote your line. You said that those people that you were speaking to, they said, it was tough for me, so you have to pay your dues as well, which is not the approach one should take. Mm-hmm. Please talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Sometimes as longtime immigrants, we forget where we're coming from.
Yeah.
We forget that we had challenges and all of a sudden we have arrived. And then, you know, we don't even think of the others who are coming. My belief is that if you walked a particular pathway and you encountered obstacles, the onus is on you. The responsibility is on you to help to guide other immigrants to say, listen, I took this route. It didn't work. Try this strategy. Mm-hmm. Or this strategy did not work for me, but you know what? You might have a different experience. You can try it. But oftentimes people are told, oh, you know, you have to, it was difficult for me and you have to pay your dues. Mm. Well, why tell people they have to pay their dues when you know that you could shorten that journey for them?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's in any aspect of it, whether it's in the job search, whether it's in the interview, if you know that when you went for the interview, these are some of the things you're asked. These are some of the things you faced. Or if you remember someone was telling me that they went to an interview and the person who was giving them the most trouble or the most, you know, difficult, were treating them differently then, mm-hmm. was someone of their own culture. Hmm. You know, and that kind of surprised me because I'm saying you're part of the interview panel. You should be there to at least support the individual, not to support in terms of giving them the answers, but at least understanding or clarifying, you know, certain aspects of the interview or even rephrasing the interview question so the person understands it well. Not to put up barriers or to suggest to the other panelists that, well, you know, I'm here and, you know, they're there. No. So sometimes we as immigrants, we behave in a way as if, well, you know, we arrived in Canada and all was well, or we arrived in Canada, it was very difficult. And so you have to walk that difficult path. I don't subscribe to that. I am saying if I found an easier way to do something, I'm going to let people know. And if I have resources that I can offer these individuals, I'm going to do that. Because at the end of the day, you are making it easier or smoother for somebody else. It's already difficult for them.
Yeah.
They have moved from their new country. Many of them coming with families. They need to settle families. Children are there. They don't, you know, it's so much that if you can make it easier for them, then by all means, go ahead.
Hmm. You know, you said something very correct that it can be seen in different aspects of the immigrant life. I'll give you like one personal example that me in this content creation journey, I have had people who have had conversations with me, like they've even made promises, honestly. And when the time when I really needed their help, they have not replied me back or they have completely dodged the question just because they are ahead in that journey and they, you know, how we kind of calculate in this social media world that they have more followers than me or they have more audience than me and they have refused to help me. Like not directly, but indirectly, they have refused to help me. And that's the approach. I don't know why people forget that they have all been in that phase. They have all been in that state where they did not have that support, they did not have that following. And instead of helping others who are new in their journeys, they are completely shunning them away.
Well, again, you have to understand that people are people. And it doesn't matter where they're from. Hmm. People are people. Some people are just selfish and they hoard things. Others are generous. Mm-hmm. And generosity doesn't reside in one particular culture or one particular person.
Yeah.
And so that's it. The bottom line is that whoever you are, there are people who will do good and support others, and there are people who will hold back.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Yeah. No, I have to mention even I've been grateful to all the people who have showed the support, you know, throughout my this podcast journey, and who have reached out themselves and shown that and trust and appreciation towards the work. And I am definitely grateful for that, and can't be more thankful to them for sure. So Dizzy, let's just pivot towards the right career solution, you know, a venture you started in December 2003. First of all, I just love the name because it has your name in it, which is WRIGHT, the right career solution. And you started this to help professionals take their careers to a new height. Tell us all about it and the help that is available to our listeners.
Well, first of all, I told my husband that I married him so I could use his name in my business.
Okay.
So that's how the right career solution came about. So yes, as I said earlier, I spoke about my entrepreneurial journey, how I moved from corporate into my business. And I was working with this particular company, and I saw the writing on the wall that sooner or later the company wasn't going to exist for much longer. Mm-hmm. And I had a long-term goal, was to go full-time into my business. So when I left the company, and I want to pay tribute to the company as well, because it actually paid for the program I did, the career development practitioner program that I completed. The company sponsored that. And that was very good. But anyway, so I launched the business. Actually, I launched it in January 2004. Okay. It was the same time when the company I was working with, they called me into the office, and they said they had someone from an outplacement company come to speak with me. And when I went into the office, I was kind of laughing. And the lady said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yes, I am." Mm-hmm. And because I laughed, because I said, exactly what she was going to teach me, that's what I just finished learning. That's the business I'm going to be going into.
Yeah.
So I laughed, and I told her I was okay. I went back to my boss's office, and I said, "You know what? Rather than putting me through this program, just add that money that you're going to pay those people, add it to my severance." Mm. And that's how I negotiated, my way into having them add that to my severance pay. And then I left the company and I started my business. I went into it full time. Now, again, I repeat, I know I said it earlier, it was not easy. It was not smooth sailing, but it was something I had to do, and I have stuck with it. You know, we have had the valleys and the peaks and valleys and all of that. But up to this day, I do have the support of my husband and my children, and of course, a lot of people who are part of my network. Mm. So that's how I actually got into it full time. And I do serve mid-career professionals and emerging leaders and executives as well, not only with the mechanics of, you know, the job search mechanics in terms of the resume development, cover letter, LinkedIn profile, and all of that, but I do coach. Coaching is a piece that really puts everything together. It's, engaging in conversations with individuals to say, where do you want to go? What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What is it that you love doing? What is it that people say you do well? What is it that you don't want to have in your next role? So we go through that. It's a part of not only their own self-assessment, but it's also the conversation with me as the coach to help them identify a path where they would want to go. Because a lot of people have come to me and they said, "Oh, well, you know, I need a job and I need a resume." I said, that's not the first thing you do. You have to understand, what skills do you want to market yourself in on this resume? What companies would use the skills So a lot of assessment has to happen before you start thinking of resume and cover letter and job search. That's where people get frustrated because they just throw the resume out there as if it's a dart and, mm-hmm. you know, anywhere it falls, then they realize they're not hearing back from people. They have to be strategic. And being strategic means knowing what skills they have, knowing what the market demands, and marrying those to produce this particular document so they can, you know, go ahead and market themselves to employers.
No, Lizzie, I think it sounds incredible, but I wanted to also tell us that where people can connect with you.
Okay, so they can find me on my website, which is www.therightcareer.com, and it's my name, right? And I am on LinkedIn. It's easier to get me on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Just search for me, Daisy Wright, Chief Encouragement Officer. You'll find me. And I also have a membership program called the Aspire to Grow. I recently launched the Aspire to Grow Leadership Academy. Mm-hmm. And it's through this part of my business where I will be offering webinars and presentations. Some will be paid, obviously, and some are free. And one of the paid programs, if you will allow me to mention that, is a program that helps people who are already employed. So they're not searching for jobs, mm-hmm. but they need the skills to learn how to find their voice at work, how to speak up, how to grow their confidence, how to negotiate even internally, and how to hone their leadership skills. These are people who are already in jobs, but they need those additional skills to help them advance. And that's what the Aspire to Grow Leadership Academy offers. So, yes, so that's pretty much it.
Okay, no, that's amazing. And I think to all my listeners, the links to contact Daisy and to check out her website, all the links can be found in the show notes.
Absolutely.
So just last few questions I just have for you, Daisy, and then we can jump into the final segment. The first question I want to ask you is, you know, with this increasing emphasis on diversity and inclusion in this workplaces, how do you think can organizations better support and empower immigrant employees to thrive and contribute, I would say, to their fullest potential?
That's a very good question. And I'm so glad that you have touched on diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. It's a hot topic these days. And there are two sides to it. Some people, you know, are saying, oh, you know, too much, you know, we're going through diversity fatigue and all of that. But if we think in terms of what diversity really means, it's having diverse perspectives. When you have that, it makes, well, we solve problems easier and better because you're getting points of view from different people. Different people will have different perspectives. You put them together and yeah. problems are solved. That's one. The equity piece is, yes, rightly or wrongly, there are people who, based on who they are, based on their privileges, yeah. they are literally ahead. No harm in saying, let's see what's happening over here. Mm-hmm. Right? And who else can we bring into the fold? You imagine somebody who is equally qualified. And I'm talking about qualification now. A lot of people believe the moment they hear diversity, equity, inclusion, somehow you're lowering the standards.
Yeah.
And I want to be very clear on that. DEI has nothing to do with lowering the standards. It means rather than choosing your next employee from the base that you already have, expand that base. See who else would be equally or even better qualified than your standard base. That's what it is. Inclusion, the inclusion piece is, okay, now you have a diverse set of employees.
Yeah.
But again, offer them opportunities. Don't issue performative statements like, yes, we have a diverse employee base. Yet, where are they? Do they see themselves throughout the organization at different levels of the organization? Or do you just have them in numbers, but they're all at the bottom? So you have to be careful when it comes to that inclusion piece. Or they may be sitting at the table, but are they really included? You know, inclusion shouldn't be optics to say, yes, they're there on their website. We have them. And yet in the background, you know, they are not actively participating or engaging as they should. And then the belonging piece is, yes, you have them, but do they feel as if they belong?
Absolutely. Yes.
Are they just sitting at the table, but their perspective is not being taken into account? So it's one huge topic. Some people, like I said before, are tired of it, but they had better not get tired of it because it's not going away. The landscape is changing. The face of organizations, the face is changing. And we had better learn again. Learning, we have to learn, unlearn, learn again, relearn, and all those things. But DEIB isn't going away.
Yeah. No, 100%. And I love this one aspect. You said that it's not only about having the seat at the table. It's also about being able to participate in those decisions where their say would be heard, and being able to make that decisions which is going to impact the upcoming employees, and they can also feel more belonged. And I think they are the one who can, being on the table, tell you what is the pain point or what is something that is necessary for the people who are coming next to your organization.
Exactly. Yes, their perspective should count.
So, Dizzy, now we're in the final segment of the podcast. I call it Beneath the Accent. And because we are knowing each other beneath the accent, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. You can answer them in one word or a sentence or however you feel like. The idea is just to know more about you. So, are you ready?
I am ready.
So what is your favorite way to unwind after a long day of work?
My favorite way to unwind is, you know, just to sit and relax with my family and, you know, have some conversations. How was your day? And of course, you know, we'd probably be watching news on television and, you know, sports. I'm a sports fanatic. And the family, we're all sports fanatics. So, you know, you'd find us really relaxing, watching sports. And if it's, say, like now, we'd be outdoors, and outdoors meaning walking. I'm not an active sports anybody in terms of participating. But walking, I find relaxes me very well. It frees my mind to think and just be free. So, yes. So it's walking, sports.
So my next question is, if you could have dinner with any historical or any public figure, who would it be and why?
It would have to be Barack Obama.
Okay.
I enjoy listening to him, how he articulates his messages. And I would just have to, I would be so happy to be sitting at a table with him and just listening to him speaking. That would definitely be him, Barack Obama. In fact, I actually attended an event where he was speaking in Toronto a couple of years ago, but I wasn't at the table. This time I would love to be at the table with him. Yeah.
What advice would you give to Daisy, who is in the initial months of landing in Canada?
I would probably do the same thing because I think I approached my job search in much the same way that was that was common then in terms of looking at my resume, reaching out to agencies, having mm-hmm. conversations with them. You know, they assessed, you know, where I could best fit. So I would do pretty much the same thing. Probably now, because I know so much more, my conversations would be at a higher level in terms of being more specific in terms of what I want, what I'm looking mm-hmm. for in a job. So that's what I would probably tell myself in my first days of landing here in Canada.
What's the most memorable vacation you have ever taken?
I would have to say it's my recent vacation in Cuba. Mm. And that was just last December. It was the best vacation in a sense, and not for what people might think. Because when you want to go, when you want to say have great fun, you know, you have to head to Jamaica. Mm-hmm. But this one was more learning experience for me. Mm-hmm. To meet the Cuban people, to understand. I mean, I saw a group of people who were happy within them, within, you know, their own boundaries. Like, they were just simple. They were just kind, helpful, and grateful for anything that, being grateful for, you know, things that we were able to offer them, going out into the countryside and seeing how they live and reminding me of how we grew up in the country mm-hmm. with, you know, with cattle and, you know, goats and donkeys and pigs and fowls mm-hmm. and just this simple life. Mm-hmm. And that's what it brought me back to the simple life of how I grew up in the country.
Interesting. Very interesting. If you could eat one type of cuisine for the rest of your life, what would it be?
That would have to be lobster plus salmon and shrimp. All three.
all seafood.
All three would make me my good dinner. Yeah. Don't okay. give me one without the other. Just include all three.
If you could have one superpower, what would it be and how would you use it?
My superpower really is to encourage people. That's why my title is Chief Encouragement Officer.
Yeah.
And I do that in everything that I do, whether it's working with clients or whether it's somebody I just meet on the street. Because so many people need encouragement. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going through issues. You might not know what their situation is, but just to offer a word of encouragement, to say it might look dark right now, mm-hmm. but there's every dark cloud has a silver lining. Mm. So that's what I do. That's my superpower, encouraging, inspiring, motivating people to be their best selves.
Mm. Love that.
That's my superpower.
Okay, so describe Canada in one word or a sentence.
Welcoming.
Okay. And finally, Daisy, if you could leave me with one piece of advice, what would it be?
I would say continue doing what you're doing. Your podcast is offering a service that it's unique. Even by its name, my thick accent, that in itself is... Mm-hmm. It is a great marketing tool. Mm-hmm. And then you are getting guests from different, you know, background and experiences. Yeah. And you're highlighting, because what you're doing, you're educating your listeners on different levels.
Yeah.
If you're coming to Canada, these are some of the people that you will meet. These are some of the experiences that you will have. These are some of the pitfalls yeah. to avoid. And that's what your podcast is doing. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I would encourage you to do.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you for the advice, Chief Encouragement Officer. And thank you for being on the podcast as well and adding value to my listeners. Thank you, Daisy. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Hey, listener. Thank you for making it to the end. I highly, highly appreciate you listening the podcast. Subscribe to the podcast if you haven't as yet. And please share with your friends or anybody you think would like it. And like I always say, we encourage you to follow your heart, but also us on Instagram. The handle is mythickaccent. You can also leave us a review or write to us at hello@mythickaccent.com. So stay tuned and let's continue knowing each other beneath the accent.